October and 2020, if you can believe it. We are in the last quarter of the year. I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I have the privilege of facilitating our meeting. What I'd like to do, just in light of the fact that our year has been what our year has been, in a way that we've been introduced to, I think, 2020, in a way that we would not have anticipated. And there has been intensity on so many sides that it would be inappropriate, and I dare would say irresponsible, to just jump into the meeting as if we're not aware that the world has been impacted and many of us have been impacted. I do not presume nor assume to know all that's happening in your world or in your life. What changes have transpired, some unexpected in positive ways and others unexpected in ways that have stretched you. What I'd like to do, just in light of that, so that we can do our work today, is give a moment for us just to breathe, just to take a second, or take a few seconds actually, and do a deep breathing exercise that just settles our hearts, calms our minds, and prepares us for the work. I want to say thank you to everyone who has stepped into this space, who has taken the time to work through this new way of doing business. I won't call it the new normal. It's the current normal. It's the way we're doing business together. Thank you for your continued commitment to the work. Thank you for your investment in these processes and this project. For the committee itself, thank you for your volunteerism, continuing to prioritize what we know is so necessary, and that's solidifying families at times like this. For the staff and of PHB, appreciate your work and your leadership to get us to this space. Again, recognizing we're in the midst of this time of intensity. And to all others who are joining us in this meeting, we appreciate your presence. So if you would right now, just kind of relax into your seat and join me with a deep breath. And now release. Let's take another one. And now release. I appreciate it. One of the realities of stress is that we forget to breathe. One of the realities of pressure is that we shorten our breath. And in the midst of intensity, I want to just remind you, pause for a moment, take a deep breath, recenter so that we can do the work and we can keep functioning. I appreciate it. So we will get rolling now. I believe there was a reminder. Okay. So thanks everybody for joining us today. And want to remind everyone, especially those who are on screen, that the meeting is being recorded. Important for you to know. What you have in front of you is kind of our online meeting protocols. We're asking you to be patient and respectful, to make sure that you check your speakers and microphone, to mute your microphone, keep yourself muted when you're not speaking, and then introduce yourself before speaking. Now, the chat is open for public testimony, so that is available for individuals to type in your thoughts, your feedback, and your interaction. All right, our next slide, please. Let me do roll call, and we will get going for today's outline. There's our agenda, as you can see. So for those who are the Bond Oversight Committee members, I'm just going to identify you, and then I will give PHB staff the opportunity to identify themselves as they present. And for those who may be wondering, the reason why you see me twice is so that I'm on my iPad so that you can see and hear me, and then I'm also on my tower so that I can see everyone else. So there aren't two of me, it's just me, in twice. All right. So, Bond Oversight Committee members, Susan.
Susan Emmons. Bond Oversight Committee member. Good morning.
Good morning, Susan. Annalise.
Good morning, everyone. Annalisa Curler, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Good morning, Annalise. Alan.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Alan Lazo with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and a member of the Bond Oversight Committee.
Good morning, Alan. And then Todd.
Good morning, everyone. Todd Struble, Bond Oversight Committee.
Great. Welcome. Glad you were here. We have on the agenda a space for public testimony, and that was for, I believe, for those who had pre-signed up who indicated that they wanted to share. Is that correct, Tanya? Or Tanya?
That's Tanya. Hi. Yes, that is correct. I think before we go into public testimony or give people a chance to submit sign up for that, we can review the minutes from the last July meeting and get those approved.
Absolutely. Hopefully you've had a chance already, Bond Oversight Committee members, to review the minutes. And if you would need a moment to do so, I can actually see you, which is awesome. You can indicate so by just raising your hand if you need a moment, or if we're ready to approve, we can go ahead with that.
I'm ready to approve that I read them and they look accurate.
Excellent. You want to make a motion, Susan?
Yes, I make a motion that we approve the minutes as included in our packets and electronically. Yeah.
I'll second the motion.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. So by way of agreement, if you will just say yes.
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 This is Todd. I'll abstain just because I was not present, but I have read them.
Okay. Excellent. Minutes are carried forward, and we can go into our time of public testimony. Tanya, I will defer to you.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. This is Tanya again. I don't see anyone that has submitted anything in the chat, so we can give it another few moments. I know that it takes me a minute to type in here my thoughts.
Tanya, this is Shannon. Just to be clear, are you asking that people just submit their testimony in the chat during this time period, or that they indicate in the chat that they would like to testify for 2 minutes? I was just unclear myself.
Yeah, they can just indicate in the chat, and yes, that's fine. Thank you for that clarification. All right, I'm not seeing anyone raising their hands or throwing their name in the hat, so to speak. So if everyone is good, Dr. Hull, I think we can proceed.
We'll move forward. Excellent. The next item on the agenda then are the updates. So I will move to Portland Housing Bureau staff.
Yes, you get to hear from me again. Again, this is Tanya Wolfersberger. I work for the Portland Housing Bureau as a housing program coordinator for the housing bond. So I just wanted to take a moment to really, as part of our updates for this meeting, to reflect on the work and the progress that's been made over the last 12 months. So if we start by looking back to last September, when we announced the funding awards for 9 new projects from the bond opportunity solicitation, was a really exciting time, and it also showed that those 9 projects joined by 3 existing bond projects together met and exceeded 3 of the 4 production goals of the bond measure. So it's easy to kind of conjure up the feelings from that we had just a year ago today, or not today, but last month, since it's October, in our accomplishments that we made just after that first bond opportunity solicitation. And since then, our development partners have been hard at work successfully receiving pre-development loans and securing tax credits and other financing. And in particular, We know from past presentations at BOC meetings that two projects in particular have gone ahead and increased their total units and furthering our goals towards total units and our goals towards households serving 30% AMI units and family size units. So we're again excited again to see our projects reaching goals and even pushing past those goals again by some creativity and leveraging of bond-funded sources. And if you recall, those two projects in particular were 3000 Southeast Powell, who came and presented this past April, and the Anna Mann House team, who presented in July. So as you can see now, we have we've exceeded our production goals in all four of the goal categories in the bond measure. We're extremely excited and proud of that fact, and for the 12 total bond funded projects to date. Now, all of this work has also been accompanied by PHB staff, city attorney, and many others who have been hard at work behind the scenes, moving implementation processes forward. That includes two audits that were conducted, a performance audit and a financial audit, both which resulted in positive findings and recommendations. We've also been staff and others have been working really hard behind the scenes to create new templates that have been drafted for financial and regulatory documents for all of the bond funded projects. It's a huge body of work. And lastly, we've also entered into a partnership with Prosper Portland to provide technical assistance to our development partners to help our contractors and subcontractors increase the representation of DMWSB contractors on those projects. So furthering our goals towards equity in contracting. And finally, we have received some positive press and recognition, including the recent article in the Portland Housing Tribune, Portland Tribune, that went over our project in great detail and then some. So we are very pleased to see this article and be recognized for all of the hard work that our whole community has helped to accomplish. So before I hand it over to Jill for more project-specific updates, I just want to pause here and see if there are any questions or comments from the committee.
I had a comment about the Portland Tribune article. I was out of town at the time, but two community members clipped it and sent it to me. They wanted to be sure I saw it. And I think the kind of detail that you were able to give the reporter that was included, people who've worked around this for years said they've never seen this kind of a thorough report. And I think it's just commendable to staff that, and to this whole project of the bond oversight, that you could give that kind of information. And I think it was very, at least by the people I talked to, really well received, and they were really impressed by the level of detail of information. So I was really proud. I wasn't part of it, but I was proud to hear about it after the fact. Just thought it was great.
Thank you, Susan. All right, Jill, are you ready? I'm ready for you.
Hey, great. Thank you so much. My name is Jill Chen. I'm the Housing Investment Portfolio Preservation Manager at Portland Housing Bureau. So good morning to everyone on the Bond Oversight Committee. It's great to see you. I'm just going to go through some of the project sort of dashboard updates. So in addition to what Tanya mentioned, we're very excited because actually the big news was yesterday we went to City Council. And City Council approved the first bond invested project, which is 115 at Division, which is now renamed as Division Street Apartments. So that was a very, call it a milestone for all of us to have the first bond approved, and it will actually be in construction. It will be closing the end of this month, and construction will start at the end of this month. So it's a tremendous shout out to the Division Street project team that is Related Northwest and Central City Concern. So in addition to that particular project being closed, just wanted to update you all that we had a all-developer meeting back in September 9th, where we all talked about other issues that developers were looking at. We also went through the documentation, the templates, and those were, I think, good feedback from us as staff members to hear from the development team, and they themselves to hear from each other about commonalities across all the projects. The good news is I think all the projects are on target. They have very tight closings. We've got a lot of work over the next 6-7 months. Just wanted to make sure that even though we just sort of gave you the highlights on the success and the number of units, as projects move towards closing and land use and design review and all that, there may be some changes up and down, maybe in the unit count. And of course, when there is a change in the unit count, they'll come back to us for approval. The second thing that will happen is there will probably be changes in requested subsidies. For example, I know there are a project or two, I think one in particular, who we've been in deep discussion about, and it's on a PHB-owned site in which they had, you can call it extraordinary site cost, way beyond what we initially anticipated and way beyond what they anticipated. So they'll be coming in. And when we have those changes, of course, we'll bring them also in front of the Bond Oversight Committee. In terms of the risk for all the projects, what we've heard from our developer meetings is that there are some things on, I would put it in three buckets. The first is Corona, just straight up Corona, COVID-19 related. These are to do with the construction timelines. We have already had projects in our pipeline which had, you know, incidences in which the whole team had to be essentially quarantined. So we're already building in construction, you can call it contingencies. The second thing we're finding is that construction costs have increased actually, despite Corona. Yes, everybody's doing home improvement plans. Costs of timber have gone, I think, 70% increases. It was pretty high. That, of course, have impacted things. Drywall has changed and increased in cost. So those are things that are changing. The third area that we're finding is financing costs have changed, mainly in the area of low-income housing tax credits. That is softening. And across our board, the projects first came in on an average low-income housing tax credit of about 95 cents to the dollar. The current market condition is that they're in the low 80s. So if that trend continues, and if we're not able to nail down sort of the anticipated pricing that we originally thought, some of these projects will have larger gaps. So I wanted to make sure you all are aware. And we as PHB are working closely with our development partners in the value engineering, looking, scrubbing the numbers and all that. But these are the risks we're looking at. So right now, everything is on pace. And I'm so pleased that we've got beautiful renderings for all of you to see. Next slide, please. Tanya? There you go. So looking ahead in the next 6 months, we have some aggressive project closings. Division has already closed. I mean, not closed. It will close in next month. So we have 8 project closings, which means they're all going to, all the financing is going to come. They're all going to start construction. So our project developers are extremely, extremely busy. We've got Cathedral Village and Las Adelitas. They're both going to be presenting today, and they're going to, their target closes January. Hayutuluxum, which is the formerly known as a Prescott site, and Westwind is targeting close in February. And Stark Street, Anaman, and Susan Emmons are all targeted to close March, maybe push into April, but we think it's going to be all pretty quickly in the next 6 months. So this is very exciting, and we are, I think, just extremely excited to present to you these projects. And with Cathedral Village, Steph Condor is here today from Related, and I believe Travis Phillips from Catholic Charities will also be here to present Cathedral Village. Las Adelitas, Tracy Manning, and Kevin Kellogg is here from Hacienda to also present. So it's very exciting. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Mike Johnson to talk about the next slide's expenditure report. Thank you. Oh, any questions first?
Actually, Jill, I did have a question. So it sounded to me like, to sum it up, basically costs are going up and less money is possibly available at the federal level. And I know it sounds like you're working with folks to kind of scrub financials to see where cost savings can be had and how we can be creative. Do you, you know, short of being able to kind of solve for that gap, what's the plan, or what are kind of thoughts about different strategies around, I know we have some money still left that was very strategic that was part of the goal, I think, was this possible concern. And then also just like other parts of funding, like what's the kind of thinking? Less units?
We're hoping not less units.
Okay.
And we have been working with our development partners. So in addition to value engineering and getting the cost as much nailed down as possible, one of the reasons you see this fast closing is for those projects that have the low income housing tax credits already, you can call it signed through a executed letter of intent, we're trying to make sure we do not have any slippage. So, because the minute you open up these extending times, the investor may come back and say, well, you know, my 95 cents I was going to give you, well, I've just dropped it down to 90 cents. And you sit there and go, you know, why? Also, we're working with our development partners to help them think about what are some other gap funding sources. So a number of our development partners already received some. For example, Stark Street received gap funding from LIFT with Oregon Housing and Community Services. And Las Adelitas received some funding also from OHCS through their gap. So we are working with them as much as possible to see where else can they go. We've been talking with different folks also about, you know, the PSEF funds. This is Portland Clean Energy Fund. They just came out with their $8.6 million in solicitation. Maybe, you know, they've indicated, our colleagues at BDS have indicated interest in supporting affordable housing. So this is maybe where there may be a possibility to collaborate as well. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. I will also say, and maybe this is not under my purview as a bond advisory committee member, one of the things I was really excited about was the fact that we were able to finance these projects with just low-income housing tax credits and bond funding and not being able to have to go to additional sources, and knowing how competitive 9% are or LIFT funding is. And so just wanting to reiterate my excitement about the ability to do this without going elsewhere.
I agree. And that was one of the critical components for us, is we didn't want them to have to try to bundle it together. Any other questions?
Hey, Jill, and this maybe will come up later. I know Mike's going to talk about kind of the finance piece, but is there any, I guess the root of the question is, Is the bond funds solely on the hook for gaps, or is PHB talking about other sources, especially within PHB, to if there are other shortfalls? And so that might be a question also that goes out to other PHB advisory bureaus like PHAC, PHAC, right? So is that a discussion, or is it solely the bond funds and then like some of these other gap funds that folks might pursue?
At this time, Alan, we have not received requests for gap funds yet, except for the two that has already been presented. And I think it was two oversight committee sessions ago, we presented a process by which, if there's any changes in the request, the process by which the developers need to come to PHB to request additional bond funds. Our goal is, of course, to try to work with them as much as possible instead of coming to PHB every time there is a, you know, $100,000 gap. It's sort of like, we all know, it's the big ones that we are worried about. The $100,000, most of the developers can figure out themselves. Does that answer your question?
And if I may interject just for a moment, Ellen, there is not a lot of other available funds within PHB's budget from the large majority of these projects, primarily because we haven't had a citywide source of funds in the past other than construction excise tax and bonds. And frankly, our construction excise tax funds are being used to pay for the pre-development of all of these projects and for Metro. And then because construction excise tax is a result of market activity, our projections, unfortunately, for construction excise tax have also been dramatically reduced because of the economic downturn that we are experiencing and expect to experience. But part of the reality is that citywide funds are, if we do need to look at increasing amounts, we will probably most likely look to the bond funds because there really isn't another source within our own budget. So I just wanted to be candid with everybody about that.
Thanks, I appreciate that, because that definitely plays in, I think that level of information and transparency definitely plays into how we think about the remaining dollars, absolutely. So I think that's helpful for us to transition to Mike too. Thanks.
Excellent, thanks Jill for your presentation, and we are gonna move to Mike. Just to try to stay on time, we've got a full agenda for the day. So, Mike, we are all ears.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Holt. Mike Johnson, I'm the Finance and Accounting Manager for the Portland Housing Bureau, and have a fairly short presentation today because we're only a couple of months since the last report. So I'll point out the one significant change is that you'll notice that our interest/credits amount has now jumped up to a larger percentage. And as I mentioned at the last meeting, because we've sold $164 million in bonds recently, that is generating some significant interest earnings. Just in review, that's the fourth bond chunk that we have sold. There was three previous ones. We have a couple of $1,000s still remaining in the second issuance, and then a few $100,000 left in the third one, in addition to the $164 million. So we will be moving through those first sets of bond proceeds that are remaining first before we draw on the $164 million. So that interest will continue to increase. But as Jill noted, with eight projects closing here in the next 6 to 8 months, we will start seeing some significant draws on the bond funds. We've got a little more spending, of course, on bond delivery, a couple more months of that, but that's really the significant change from the previous month. So happy to answer any questions.
Questions of the Bond Oversight Committee.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the important piece, I think, Mike, is just that bottom line, right? That total funds remaining, as far as the conversations go. So that's the piece that is going to be there for contingencies, and well, or is it the project reserves that are listed here? Is that, are those?
Yeah, the project reserves were the what we intentionally put aside to deal both with construction cost increases and changes in LIHTC funding. So that was as we were sizing this the last bond issuance, there was a lot of analysis done by Jill and her team on what we might potentially need due to those COVID-related impacts that she went over.
Okay, so that's the So that's the 10% of the total project costs, and then so there's an additional 24 that's remaining. So that's roughly what, 39? Yeah. Okay. That's another great.
Right. So there's a fair amount of funds still not committed. And we're earning interest on the bond proceeds that we have in place. So great. That's kind of the third bucket we could go to.
That's good. It's surprising that the finance guy gets to be the good news guy in this scenario, huh?
I'll take what I can get.
Maybe you all set it up that way, right? We had Jill come in with the doom and gloom and then Mike come in with the good news.
Okay, I'll go with that too.
Go with that. Any other questions from the Bond Oversight Committee? Excellent. Thanks, Mike, for your presentation. We appreciate it. We are going to go then. Oh, Molly, did you have something? Okay. All right. We're going to go then to the presentations. And I would indicate, if we are going to stay on time with our meeting today, you have about 40 minutes for both. And so about 20 minutes apart for your presentation and a space for questions so that we've got room for our mayor to interact with us today. So Cathedral Village, it is in your hands.
I guess I'll just go ahead and start in. Hi, I'm Steph Condor with Related Northwest. I have Travis Phillips here with me as well, who's with Catholic Charities. This project is a partnership with Catholic Charities. We are co-owning, co-developing. Catholic Charities will be providing the resident services and case management services. We also have a partner called ByPDX, which is a North Portland local youth service arts enrichment program that we're bringing into the community as well. And we'll talk, I'll talk about it a little bit later of what the service model is and some of the enrichment things that we're doing and just kind of how we're, you know, the creativity that goes into this project, which I think is really noteworthy. Next slide. So the project is located in North Portland, which was a priority location for the Portland Housing Bond funding. It's located over by Cathedral Park, kind of right under the St. John's Bridge. Has a great view. We're really excited about the location. And it's along Crawford Street, Crawford and Salem. It's four-story wood construction, 110 units, of which over 50% are dedicated to family units. We've got a third at 30% and the remaining at 60%. We did not take project-based vouchers at this property because we were trying to do cost containment and not trigger Davis-Bacon. We also additionally have integrated permanent supportive housing, 8 units, and that, as I mentioned, Catholic Charities will be providing the services for those 8 units for case management. We are targeting families, low-income families, communities of color, immigrants and refugees, and households experiencing or at risk of homelessness. I think, you know, one of the things that made me very excited about working with Catholic Charities is their long established history in the state of Oregon working with these very populations and their deep experience in serving these families. We think is going to be a real benefit to this community, and having the synergy of having the resident service provider also be the case manager really gives us a lot of ability for good communication and really kind of being on the same page programmatically on how we're serving the residents as a whole. We think that this will house approximately 250 to 300 people, and I think that's being conservative. We have 11 three-bedroom units and 45 two-bedroom units. And next slide. We spent a lot of time in the design to make sure that we had it just right, because we believe that, you know, livability is very important for retaining the residents and also just the keeping residents feeling like they are at a home. And we are currently in plan check. We're looking pretty good. I think the first plan check, MWA is our architect. They've done a great job in the details of their plan. The aesthetics are coming out really nicely. We have a ground floor community center, like a multi-purpose room that outlooks out to, with an amazing view out to Forest Heights and Cathedral, Cathedral Bridge. All of our services and property management are co-located on the ground floor. We also are offering a teen room because we know that there's going to be a good amount of families, as well as a music technology room. And the reason we provided a music technology room, I don't know if folks are acquainted with the St. John's area, but they have the longest standing jazz festival west of the Mississippi. It's actually the 40th year running. And so we were trying to kind of take a nod of look at the culture and how it's so interwoven with music and arts in the St. John's neighborhood. So we're doing this recording room for kids to be able to mix and do their own beats. And then Vibe PBX, which does arts and music, comes in and helps train them on the equipment, but also supplements with other kind of extra enrichment program. They are located in the St. John neighborhood. The executive director, her kids go to the public school there. We feel like it is just a fantastic fit. We're also working on getting placemaking grants to do some murals on the front to further kind of intertwine arts with this community. And as you go down the building, there's these panels that we want to have different artists that are multicultural that come in to kind of represent the community. So that's some of the softer features, but I think they're really important features that connect the residents and the kids of this community to feel like this is a home that they can identify with and that they have opportunities for, you know, enriched programs that they may not otherwise have. Look, there's a lot of budget cuts going on. Music and arts, we all know, is one of the first things to go. So we were trying to maintain that in this community. We were fortunate enough to be issued $16.3 million through Portland Housing Bureau through the bond solicitation, $50,000 for the weatherization, the OMEP. We had initially thought we were going to get more. When we came onto this site, we planned on doing PTACs, which are the, you know, heat pumps and air conditioning. But because it is located close to a railroad, we wanted to be very mindful of sound transmission. So we had to change our heating system, our HVAC system. So we have kind of a roof mounted gas powered DOAS system, which takes us out of getting some of the funding with OMEP. It has to be electrical for things to get funded. So anyways, it's just something to note that that was a pot of money that went away and it was something that was unforeseeable. $8.5 million in LIHTC. We went out to equity and debt. The debt side looks really good. The equity is not looking as good. And, you know, as they were discussing, as Jill was mentioning, that's something that we're seeing out in the marketplace. We feel fortunate that we did get some offers, but they're all sub 90 cents. And I think that if you were to go out in March and get your funding or prior to that, you know, prior to that, you're probably, you know, somewhere in the mid to upper 90s. At March, it was below 95 cents, you know, right around lower 90s. And now we're seeing things below 90 cents now that we're further in. Yeah, Shannon, do you have a question?
Oh, I just wanted to comment, Steph. I know you went really quickly through it. You used the terminology equity, and I know you mean financial equity. But yes. If people are hearing on the call and following quickly, they may think somehow you're talking about MWESB participation rates, which I know you're not. So just wanted to clarify that statement that you made, just for a broader audience than
it's the finance gal in me. Yeah, so LIHTC equity.
Thank you.
And so that's a note. We're deferring about 2.4, almost 2.5 million. We've got perm debt of 7 million. We have a gap. We've estimated about 500,000. We think there is some value engineering, I'm trying to make this layman. So value engineering is where you're taking different maybe design steps or different finishes or fixtures or methods to be able to facilitate cost savings in the project. So we think there's about 200,000 that we can bring into this deal to bring that cost down. And then the remainder, I mean, Travis can attest to this. We have went under every rock. I can't even tell you the list. I had actually forgotten some of them. We have been shaking every tree to be able to get funding. We recently just interviewed with Collins, so we're hopeful for that. We're working with ETO, and we did put in for the Federal Home Loan Bank AHP grant. It will be coming out in December. So there's a multitude of ways that we're trying to work to, you know, bring this project back in line with the original budget. Next slide. I think that this kind of leads to things that, you know, have occurred to why we have that overage. It's some of it's a function of the pandemic. We're seeing, as Jill had mentioned, the lumber packages went up astronomically, so surprisingly, and it's probably the biggest trade in our budget, right? I mean, it's a four-story wood constructed building, so we definitely get more impacted by that. I would say that we're also seeing that the insurance market has really increased with all of the forest fires, and then with the rioting, underwriters are being much more conservative, and so our premiums for builders' risk and such have been going up, and we're seeing that in real time with our large division project that's underway, that's going to be closing at the end of this month. So we have some very good numbers to be able to pull from. We also, because, you know, one of the streets is not completely improved, they want us to actually go in and put in a cul-de-sac, which was unknown to us at the time, a half a cul-de-sac, and we had to move our driveway. We had to flip our driveway entrance to a different road. This lengthened the building. We had to put in a second trash room. We also found that there was a fiber optic vault that we had to move. So these were all kind of unforeseen conditions at the time. We thought we had done a good amount of due diligence, which we did. We knew that the site was going to need an upgraded foundation system. We had had that in our budget. We were really trying to be proactive, but there were some things that were unbeknownst to us by virtue of the railroad and PBOT that really kind of gave us some cost creep. Also, for sound mitigation, we end up having to go with a full brick cladding to mitigate some noise. And, you know, as I had mentioned, the DOAS system, the mechanical system, all of those things were done to be able to make sure that the residents had a home that was, you know, that didn't have sound transmission issues, that were really comfortable, that we want to make sure that they are, you know, getting return air that's really tempered, and making sure that, you know, this building is going to be very durable with the brick cladding, but it was also a function of the acoustical, and also we're using community design standards for commercial, and that requires, they don't allow for a significant amount of hardy boards, so the fiber cementitious board. So these are all those kind of millions of things that you go through that gets you like, why are you here? I'm trying to kind of give you the backstory of how our decision making went. But it is also one of the reasons we were able to get to close quickly. Look, this is the second project that will close for this bond solicitation, and going through community design standards help facilitate that for us to be more expeditious, and we're finding that that's a good move. We're able to stick to our closing dates. Next slide.
Hey, Steph.
So here, yeah.
I hate to interrupt you. You've got 5 minutes.
Okay, so here's some of the costs associated with the things that I just detailed. So you know, it's in general about $1 million over. We've been able to solve for that somewhat through, you know, value engineering, and, you know, we were fairly conservative in our underwriting. But like I said, we have about 500,000 that we see as a gap. We think about 200 can come down, and we're working on the other 300. Next slide, please. As mentioned, these are the challenges. We can keep going. Next slide. Yep. We went through this. I don't know why it's in there twice, but that's the gist of it. Our you know, Portland Housing Bureau funds, you know, we've been able to leverage basically over 2x with debt, LIHTC equity, deferred developer fee, and, you know, our ask, I think, was up at the higher end, and that, I think one thing to note is North Portland and especially the St. John's community land prices are very high in this neighborhood. And if you want to get affordable housing into neighborhoods like this that are getting super gentrified, you know, it's just a little bit more expensive to develop. Next slide. So community engagement, I think I will turn it over to Travis to talk about.
Yeah, and I'll, I know we only have limited time, so I'll breeze through this, but happy to answer any questions too. And I think, you know, what you see here is we've done a lot of outreach, perhaps not intentionally, not completely specific to this development. There's a unique tension between doing outreach and getting feedback about design, and at the same time saying, but we can't guarantee you an apartment in this building at this time. And also it's gonna be 2 years before it's built. So we learned that lesson in some outreach events that we did with African Family Holistic Health Organization about a year ago, as well as the Iraqi Society here in Portland. And so followed on with that, with some conversations with APANO, El Programa Hispano, and Familias en Acción about different amenities that they've heard from their clients that are beneficial, and perhaps some ways to ensure that our leasing strategy reaches the intended folks. And Catholic Charities worked with the PSU Masters in Urban and Regional Planning earlier this year for their workshop project that really dove deep into amenities, both in the property and near the property, and different things that we can plan for to make sure that residents are successful and have what they want and need in their units.
And also, wanted to add one thing is we did do neighborhood association meetings, inviting the whole community. And then also I did attend, the mayor held, and I think Shannon was there, at University of Portland with that whole neighborhood. I think there was probably over 100 people in attendance talking about housing needs and some of the issues that are intrinsic to that community. So we have done a good amount of footwork and meeting and doing small roundtables with different constituencies to make sure that we're getting it right. And that's also why we brought in Vibe PBX and bringing Catholic Charities, because we feel like those are the right partners to be at the table to serve the residents that we're intending to serve.
Absolutely. And I'll just note, and then we can sort of move on from here as well. One of the things that in our more recent discussions we've prioritized is making sure that there is internet access, Wi-Fi available, particularly in our community spaces. One of the things that we've found in other properties as we've moved through COVID is making sure that our resident service coordinators can work with seniors or other people who need telehealth appointments, because they're not necessarily going into the doctor, but we want to make sure that they're still having that healthcare coordination. It's more important now than ever. And then making sure that we have places where kids can connect to the internet to actually do their schoolwork. So I know that's one of the things that I just wanted to call out specifically, that that the feedback that we've gotten from existing residents and that engagement has really informed relative to our current pandemic.
Excellent. Well done. Thank you very much, Travis. Good to see you always. It's been a little bit.
Yeah.
Questions from the Bond Oversight Committee. Any questions for Steph or for Travis?
I had a question. Susan Emmons, Bond Oversight Committee member. In terms of the permanent supportive housing serving 8 people, will you have an office on site for those supportive services?
Yes. So we have, our property management area, but then right around the corner, and we did this very deliberately to kind of give it to be sectioned off from property management. So it really felt like you could have privacy and integrity to, you know, to not involve property management. So we have a resident services office that has, we also have a private conference room too. So there's a seating area outside and a place for the residents to be able to have resident services and case management services on site, ground floor.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Any other questions?
I just wanted to offer a comment if I could, Dr. Holt. I just really appreciate having these bond teams come and provide these updates around your projects. It's so great to hear all that's going on. And I think this project hits so many of the priorities that we have. I'm just really appreciate you folks coming and talking about today. And Travis, I really appreciate your comment about the community engagement and the learning around, because we know that the need is so great out there at this time that's really what people are coming is, great, when can I move in, right? And so I think that's a great learning to understand that, how to talk to community folks and engage them without and recognizing that we're talking about something a little bit down the line. So thanks for recognizing that.
I forgot, Alan, that you were actually at that African Holistic Health Organization outreach and helped us out with some materials for the Iraqi Society too. So yeah, that was a slightly awkward lesson learned, but you know, we got very valuable feedback from the folks who participated then too.
Yeah, I had gotten a call from somebody that said, I want dibs on one of those units. And I was like, dibs, I'm not sure if that's with fair housing. Let me think about that.
Hey, Todd or Annalise, any comment or question?
No question for me, just echoing. I appreciate the detail and just getting to learn more about these projects.
Likewise, it's been really beneficial to learn all this and to really dive in at this level. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We will move on then to the next project team. And again, I hate to come across forceful, but our time is our time. And so you will have 17 minutes of total presentation if you want to take it that way. I will identify the closure of your moments. I will call it out at 5 minutes so that you are aware. All right, next team, it is your opportunity.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kellogg, Director of Real Estate at Hacienda CDC, and I'm joined by Tracy Manning, who's a Senior Project Development Consultant, who's been working on this almost full time. Our project is Las Adelitas. Here's a picture, a rendering of one of the courtyards in this project. This project started more than 5 years ago when the notorious Sugar Shack came up for sale in Northeast Portland, and a coalition that included Hacienda, NAYA, Habitat for Humanity, and Verde got together and scraped together the money to buy this site. That partnership started a long process of community engagement, because at the time, no one knew it would become a housing project. The question was, what should it become? And there were extensive meetings for years getting to the point of this even being housing. So a few years ago, Hacienda, after it was concluded it should be housing, Hacienda bought out the partnership and began to pursue this project as a sort of, I think what everyone would recognize as a standard 4% tax credit project, although our funding is not really typical of that. The name Las Adelitas, if anyone is familiar with that, the Las Adelitas were the female soldiers in the Mexican Revolution. And it's an amazing real story and also mythical story. And the renaming of this flips the narrative from a location that had been used for all kinds of things that were not positive reflections, especially on women, to reflect the warrior spirit in this community. So with that, we've been soldiering on with this process. The site is a brownfield site. It's located right on, kind of on the edge of civilization here in Portland, right at the edge of where the slough begins. And we have a very thriving Cully neighborhood. To the south of us and to the north, we have industrial parks and the airport. So it's really on a both a crossroads and the edge of geological Portland and cultural Portland. We've designed a beautiful building here. It's designed by Salazar Architects. It's really a super sustainable building. Well, if you build a PHB's bond standards, you will have a super sustainable building. And there was much more community engagement that started with Salazar. They're experts in this, and virtually every aspect of the building had community input and was driven by community desires and aspirations and so forth. We have almost 7,000 square feet of common area on the first floor, which includes private areas for residents, very similar to Cathedral Village, with resident services, conference room, property management, our community's just residents' common room, room for our Niños program, and a large event space that's open for community organizations in Cully and really anyone, but it's all purely non-commercial space. Okay, next slide. Hacienda, we provide our own resident services here on site, and our partners for our 18 permanent supportive housing units are Cascadia Behavioral Health and Familias en Acción. The priority communities are those exiting homelessness, obviously low-income residents, Latino and BIPOC residents in the neighborhood. And we, this is part of a larger 15-acre campus that, where we own the majority of the property. Piece by piece has been built up, includes our offices, a number of other tax credit deals. And we have found with our community right now is about 20% Somali and 75% Latino and a mix of the rest. So the focus, it's not really one cultural driven. It's a very multicultural area, and it's an extension of a community that's already here. So some of our residents are already asking about being on the waiting list for the new building and so forth. And so we understand that people wanting dibs on the projects ahead of time. Let's see, we have a lot of studios and one bedrooms, a few two bedrooms, we have 71 two bedrooms, 26 three bedrooms, 29 one bedrooms, and 15 studios. And our permanent supportive housing units will be all the studios and some in the two and three bedroom range as well. So having our two partners there allows us to serve our folks that are coming in from homelessness, as well as families that need permanent supportive help as well. And we imagine somewhere between 400 and 450 residents will eventually live here. The Living Cully Coalition, the four partners that are part of it are also joined by the Cully Boulevard Alliance, Cully Association of Neighbors, the 42nd Avenue Association, and others. So we have seven very active community associations that will be using our event space on a regular basis. I was really happy to hear about Cathedral Village's focus on the arts. In our space, like for example, right now, I kept my phone muted because Oregon Ballet Theater has a recital camp happening in our parking lot right now. So the piano music is loud, and we have violin lessons here on our site as well. So these functions will move over into the indoor space in the event center. And we also have a plan for a competition for murals that we have located on some of the spaces as well. Sorry, energy saving light feature, sorry. Okay, we can go to the next slide. We're very close to getting our building permit and very close for our bids to be finalized. We have heard while we're talking to the contractor as they finalize their bids that they are looking at over 30% MWBE subcontractors. We had a very high percentage of minority contractors in the pre-development, and we'll extend that same effort into the supply chain and the operations as well. So our commitment to that's been working out very well. We plan to close January 14th, and our construction will start soon after that and extend on into 2022. This has been going on for a while. So prior to the bond, we worked through a lot of the issues that we might have gotten hit with if we would have been going a little faster. But really the only material changes that we did was to reduce, we actually reduced our project-based vouchers to come in under the trigger point for having prevailing wages. It ended up really helping our pro forma to reduce the vouchers. So we've looking for other ways to help with the rental assistance for our permanent supportive housing. The main issues that we've faced, sounds like we've heard it all before. There's a supply chain disruption that happens pretty randomly. One day it's sheetrock. The next day is you can't get engineers to the site. Things are happening. And so we have a lot of things coming out of the blue. Insurance and lumber cost spikes. I think Steph really explained that situation very well. I appreciate that. We had a lottery bond allocation, and because of, I guess people aren't playing video poker, no money came out of the lottery bonds. And fortunately for us, state reallocated this, and we were still able to capture that funding, but that was complicated. And the debt and equity markets are extremely tight, as described by Shannon and Steph also. We watched it drop from exactly what you described, 98 to 95, 93, and then under 90, just within a matter of a few months. And the same thing, the jittery underwriting criteria tightening up, and Wall Street a little bit all over the place. All this has made for a lot more work on our part and on the part of our equity providers and our lenders to pull this together. Next slide, please. Here's our capital stack. I think what's kind of interesting about this is, first of all, the number of sources, and a couple of these are bundled together. I had to add a few numbers together to just fit it on the page. There's a lot of grant funding in here. Our Energy Trust and Multifamily Energy Program and Metro TOD grant all adding up to well over $1 million. We have the state allocation in there. We have a LIFT allocation. and as well as our 17.3 million dollars from PHB's bond. So we have a 3.2x leverage on Portland Housing Bureau bond money. I'm not saying I would recommend this approach it as a general measure. It's very complicated. However, we are fully funded and we're going full steam ahead here to the finish line. Again, we face the challenge of things are just taking a lot longer. Just getting something notarized is a big deal compared to the before times. Next slide, please. I talked a little bit about this at the beginning with the partnership of the four community organizations and the deep involvement of the community and leadership in this project to get to where we are now. The Joint Office of Homeless Services, Cascadia and Familias teamed up. They really created this program for the permanent supportive housing, which we really need. And just fun, I think it's a fun fact. We have 10 EV charging stations. Pacific Power has given us funding to pay for those installations and the additional wire and so forth that you need. And this is also pre-wired and designed for a 300 kilowatt photovoltaic array and a battery storage backup system so that emergency spaces in our common areas can be made available to the community in times of a grid shutdown or so forth. It's not, you know, an official emergency center, but an informal place to be able to go to get power, and we're and our residents will be also supported by that. And I think just given the time, I'm just going to close there. If there's any questions, I think Tracy and I are happy to answer.
Thanks, Kevin. I will just kind of go through each of the BOC, Bond Oversight Committee members, and I'll begin with you, Susan. Susan, any comment or question?
Just thank you for such a thorough presentation. I think it's exciting, the number of units, the number of people you're going to serve, and the number of units for people at 30% or median or less. And yeah, I'll be just really interested to follow the project. I don't have specific questions, but thanks for your presentation.
Thank you. Todd?
Also, just want to appreciate the story of like a location that I think has been in the Portland mindset, or just like it's such an infamous site, and the process that it's taken to take it from where it was at to a community asset, and the community engagement process that you've gone through. I think I'm really looking forward to seeing what the end result is, and also any lessons learned from the community engagement process and the collaboration between so many different organizations. I think is something that is to be commended, and we'll look to that as inspiration, and looking forward to seeing the results.
Thanks, Todd. Alan.
Thanks, Dr. Hold. I'll just echo what other folks say, you know, with appreciation for the project. I actually live in the neighborhood next to this. I live in the Roseway neighborhood, so I've been following this project since that 5 years ago when the Sugar Shack went up for sale, and I thought this is such an amazing evolution at this point. I also think it's so encouraging to see the number of family units that are here. And so again, this project hits so many of the priorities of the bond that it's great to have you here. The one thing that I think both you and the previous project talked about was the impact of project-based vouchers on the cost of the project, which isn't something I'd heard about before. And it sounds like it's tied to prevailing wage. So it's not really a question, but it's not something that I had heard or considered before. So thanks for bringing that forward. I think it's something I want to learn more about, and so we can understand what the impact of that is, both on projects and on the folks that you're all trying to serve.
Excellent. Annalise.
Thank you. I think everyone's kind of said it. So I like ditto, 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 ditto. Thank you so much for coming and presenting. It's really wonderful to hear. And I'm, you know, have been, like others have said, this has been a long time coming, and it's so exciting to see it, you know, come to fruition.
Thank you, Bond Oversight Committee. Thanks, Kevin, for your presentation. Tracy, we didn't get a chance to hear your voice. It's always good to see your face. Hello.
Thank you, Dr. Holt.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. I'm going to interject myself because I know we have a couple minutes, just to thank Dr. Holt and the committee for your persistence over the years and your service, as the whole city owes you a debt of gratitude. I was very lucky to jump onto this project after a ton of work had been done. It's really inspiring to get to see it through. And a thank you to Shannon and her team. I am blown away by the amount of work that they crank out and really good communication with the project team. So the committee should know they've been doing really great work to keep all of these things on track in really difficult times. So just my thanks and hello. I'm sorry. I'm sad. I can't stand around and talk to you afterward.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Mr. Mayor, appreciate you being here in the midst of all that's going on in our city. We can only imagine what your workload is these days, but it's great to see you as always. And you, sir, have the floor.
Thank you very much, Dr. Holt. I appreciate it. Good morning. And thank you, everyone, for letting me join you all today. It's always an honor to be here. And I want to express my sincere appreciation to all of you for committing your time, your talent, your just all of your ingenuity to this process, and for helping to create some oversight as we rolled out the city's first ever affordable housing bond. The word unprecedented comes to mind, and I'm sure you've heard it quite a lot of late. We're hearing the word unprecedented in terms of the challenges facing our community so frequently that I have decided to call unprecedented the new status quo. We're obviously facing incredible challenges in cities, including Portland, as well as across the nation. But one thing seems to hold true. Safe, affordable housing remains very, very critical for a healthy, resilient community. Portlanders have known this for a long time. And it's thanks to our shared values that are rooted in the well-being of our neighbors and our responsibility to each other that you stepped forward to support this effort. This is the first general obligation bond for affordable housing, and you're completely aware of that. We now, after several years, we have 10 new bond projects underway. The foresight of creating stable and dedicated funding for affordable housing is definitely paying off for the people of this city. And you are the ones making sure that it's successful and that it's accountable. The units that we've added to development plans this year means that there are now 1,494 units of bond housing open or in development throughout our city. That's enough housing, I am told, for just over 3,000 people. In fact, I'm told it's 3,076 people. That's a huge accomplishment. That's one that's been completed in a very short period of time, and we could not have done it without your guidance and your expertise. I'm just, and I say this not only as the mayor, but as just a resident of this city, I'm really impressed with the work of this group and the staff of the Portland Housing Bureau. Shannon, thank you for your great leadership, not only in keeping the goals in front of us, but exceeding the goals that we promised to the taxpayers of this jurisdiction. And I'm looking at the projects that are currently funded, and I can honestly say that we are delivering the best and highest use of these funds. And the public believes that because we know that we have this accountability mechanism with you. The Portland Housing Bond reminds us what we can accomplish when we work together and when we imagine a better future for our fellow residents throughout the city. We are all thinking about our neighbors, we're thinking about the community, we're thinking about the city that we love. And I just want to thank you for your partnership and your commitment to this work. And I look forward to the many more things that we're going to accomplish together. So I really just wanted to give you a shout out, pat on the back, a deep thank you from me to you for the great work that you've done on behalf of all of us in this community. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any of the Bond Oversight Committee want to respond to our mayor? We'll just do free floor flow. So I won't call you by name. We'll just let you respond as you choose.
Well, I'd just like to say, Susan Emmons, Bond Oversight Committee member, that in acknowledging the staff, I would say we've all been so impressed by the professionalism of the staff, the transparency and the information they give us. And even when we're very persistent in the early stage about questions, they always respond. And I just think that we've got the brightest and the best right now at the Portland Housing Bureau. And just want to say that because many of us have observed public officials for years, and this is a really sharp and hot team. So just wanted to say that.
Susan, if I could also just say, thank you for saying that, because right now public employees at all levels of government are absolutely under attack. They're under attack. And I really appreciate your acknowledgement, because you recognize that the people we have working in the Housing Bureau, and frankly in other bureaus in our city, they could be working anywhere they want, and they wouldn't get the late night calls. They would be getting paid more than probably cheapskate boss Ted is paying them. And they don't always get the thanks that they deserve. So thank you for that acknowledgement. And I know they're on the call and they're hearing you, and I'll just tell you, I'm grateful to hear that. Thank you.
This is Todd, and I just wanted to echo that appreciation for staff. And I guess I want to go back to just the when I joined the Oversight Committee, and this bond was just getting off of the ground. And I want to acknowledge the mayor's role in slowing down the process at the very beginning to make sure that there was an equitable thought process and guidelines created for this bond, despite the time pressure. And to see that now, you know, a few years later, that we've been able to deliver on the bond goals in a relatively like fast time, despite taking that extra time to do the engagement and listen to community. I just want to, again, appreciate the staff and the time invested in doing the process correctly and well, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd, and you did a much better job of making your bed today than I did making mine.
I'm in the process of moving.
No, truly, Todd, I'm impressed.
It's really Thank you.
Alan, Annalise?
Sure. Good morning, Mayor. This is Alan Lazo from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. I just want to echo what Todd said. I'm really glad that Todd brought that up, because I do remember that process kind of distinctly and how much sort of turmoil there was around slowing that process down and being so meaningful. But I think just what we heard today in these presentations is the direct result of having the opportunity for those communities to engage in that process. So I agree. I'm so glad that Todd brought that forward. I also want to appreciate, Mayor, that the point you made about the resiliency of this community and how rooted it is in this work. I think for all of us that live in this community and drive around right now and see the impact of folks sleeping in tents on the streets, that we know how important getting this work done is for the next crisis, right? We know what these three crises in front of us have created in our community, and we have to, and we are doing better and getting ready for the next one. And that's what makes this work so vitally important. So thank you so much to you and the PhD team for the commitments you've made to do this work and do it right.
Thanks, Ellen.
Yeah, I mean, I will echo a lot of what everyone has been saying about how wonderful PHB staff has been. And that this, you know, I came a little bit later onto this committee, and so, you know less about some of the history, but have been really impressed the last year and a half or so on this, and also just in terms of the projects that have come before us. And it has been, particularly in the last year, such a moment of hope and excitement in the midst of what has been, you know, a tough 2020 in many ways. And just knowing how much more investment is coming down the pipeline from the Metro Housing Bond and other sources of funding, and being able to really see this one on the ground starting to really get running is so exciting, with like that look to the future as well.
Thank you. Thanks, Bond Oversight Committee. Members, I think it would be appropriate to again express our appreciation. Thanks so much, Mayor, for spending some time today and coming in. Director Callahan, did you have any comments?
Thank you. That was so lovely to hear on behalf of all of the staff of the Housing Bureau. We greatly appreciate working with this committee, and it is a bright spot. I mean, we are very fortunate, I think all of us, to know and be part of something that feels that makes you feel good in a time when it's really difficult. And seeing how hard all of our partners and contractors are working under just extraordinary circumstances. I mean, as Kevin said, even getting things notarized can be a challenge, let alone getting lumber and or securing the right kind of pricing. And, you know, the Housing Bureau doesn't do this work without our partners and without our other Bureau partners at the city. And I just wanted to say, especially while the mayor is on the call, how much the Bureau of Development Services has been supporting the Housing Bureau and our partners, and I know how difficult it is for them in a true remote time. So just real gratitude, I think, from all of us and all of the team. We have an amazing team at the Housing Bureau. As you know, directors sometimes come and go from bureaus, but it's really the folks that do this work day in, day out that are the heart of our Bureau and deserve all the credit in the world. So thank you for the acknowledgement of the great team at the Bureau.
Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for your work today and all the presenters who stepped into the space to do so. Our next meeting is scheduled for the 4th of February. It will be at this time, and we will be, I presume, in this platform. Hopefully, by the following meeting in April, we'll be able to step into a space where we can see one another. And I'm going to borrow your word, Mayor, unprecedented. And I'm going to say that what happens at unprecedented times are unprecedented responses. What you find out in a crisis is what you're made of. And there's nothing like the truth of pressure and the product that comes out of it. So I appreciate the product and how everyone is pressed in to the pressure to keep this vital work at the center. Thank you so much for your time. Look forward to seeing one another. Take care, everybody. And have a great Thursday. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody.